front of the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E!
Dave?
Right, man, Dave.
Dave's not here!
Hey everyone, it's Dave, and welcome to another edition of Just What Do You Think You're Doing, Dave? On today's show, I wanted to talk about religion. Now, if we think about religion and the way it applies to our nation, we do have in the Constitution a separation of powers between the church and state. And there's a very specific reason why that comes about, and I'm going to tell you about that in a couple of seconds here. But first, I just wanted to dispel a notion that people say, oh, we're a Christian nation, we were founded on Christianity, and yada, yada, yada. And that also is patently untrue, as you're going to hear in a moment, because there's a little more to this and a little more depth to how this all works. So let's start with talking about what England is. England is a constitutional monarchy. They have a monarchy that's embedded and ingrained in the religion there. There's something called the Church of England, also called the Anglican religion, that's actually based on the fact that the king or queen, the sovereign of the nation, is ordained by God to rule the nation. So there's a very fundamental thing that's going on there, that this was a problem for the patriots that were coming over to the New World. They realized that they wanted to be separated from the King and Queen of England. By maintaining something like the Anglican religion, you're continuing to do this. So think about the Anglican Church and one of its principles. And what Wikipedia tells us is that for the American patriots, even the forms of Anglican services were in doubt, since the prayer book rites of Martins, Evensong, and Holy Communion all included specific prayers for the British royal family. Consequently, the conclusion of the War of Independence eventually resulted in the creation of two new Anglican churches, one of which became the Episcopal Church in the United States, in those states that had achieved independence. So consider that for a moment. There's a religion that's tied to the monarch. Now, I would argue that today it's probably not as deep because the monarch doesn't have absolute rule the way they did, say, in the Middle Ages. But today, they're still the head of the church. Today, that's a big issue. How do you make that work in that case? How does that come together if you're trying to get away from the English monarchy and you're trying to get away from King George? And yet, here we are, we're taking on religion? That just doesn't make sense. Now, you could make the case that the founding fathers were religious people. And I think that's pretty clear that they were not. Some certainly were, but they were not of the beliefs that we think of today in religion. They were less devout followers of the Bible and the religious principles, and more about secular sort of religion and believing in a greater good. One of the biggest people that you think about is Benjamin Franklin, who was a larger-than-life personality who did a lot for the United States. And I've heard the joke, he was the first president of the United States who was never president of the United States. And he was a pretty a-religious person. He didn't believe in much of anything. I think you could argue he was an atheist, though I think there's a little bit more to it than that. But in principle, he didn't follow a religion particularly at all. So you realize that maybe not everybody had this religious convictions. And then when you look at one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson became an Episcopal because of the reasons I mentioned before. And at one point in 1803, was quoted as saying, "I am Christian in only the sense in which Jesus wished anyone to be." That was it. That was as far as his religious beliefs went. He never talked about his religion. He didn't use it as anything. And if you read the Constitution, it's clear that he really wasn't talking about anything. And when he talks about the separation of church and state, it's very important to consider the monarchy and the Anglican religion and understanding that we had to keep those two separate. And then further, realizing that we have a nation that was founded on something different, a different set of principles. We didn't want to establish as a nation a specific religion that we wanted people to follow. There was no form of Christianity that was really the prevailing version of Christianity that everyone would follow. In fact, let's go through some of the religions that were around at the time of the nation's founding, and we can talk about them a little bit. I think you can eliminate the Anglican Church as being an influential part of it because they didn't want that to be there. But we could look at the Episcopal Church that came about as a result of the Revolutionary War, And what we learn is that embracing the symbols of the British presence in the American colonies, such as the monarchy, the episcopate, and even the language of the Book of Common Prayer, the Church of England almost drove itself to extinction during the upheaval of the American Revolution. More than any other denomination, the War of Independence internally divided both clergy and laity of the Church of England in America, and opinions covered a wide spectrum of political views, patriots, conciliators, and loyalists. While many patriots were suspicious of loyalism in the church, about three-quarters of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were nominally Anglican laymen. It was often assumed that persons considered high church were loyalists, whereas persons considered low church were patriots, assumptions with possibly dangerous implications for the time. So if we think about the Episcopal Church, maybe, you know, you could say that the Episcopal Church was the prevailing religion among the people that were signers of the Declaration of Independence. You could maybe make the case that the Episcopal Church was the one that was the predominant one that became the biggest thing in the United States when we became the United States, when we first formed the Americas. But of course, the Episcopal Church changed over time too. If you look at the way they were founded, based on the fact that they came from the Anglican religion and they evolved over time and there were several factions of it, then they had to come together as one religion that we now think of as Episcopal. Would you say that Episcopal would be our founding principle? Would you say the Episcopal Church would be the one that would make sense to say, hey, that's the, you know, the religion that everyone had? And if I just came to you and said, hey, you know, we were founded on the Episcopal Church and that's the religion we should be following, what do you think most people would say? It's crazy, right? We're a Christian nation. Why would we follow the Episcopal Church? Because that was the one that was the predominant one at the time that the founding fathers were out there. Now, there was another church called the Congregational Church. The model of congregational churches was carried by migrating settlers from New England into New York and then into the Old Northwest and further. With their insistence on independent local bodies, they became important in many societal reform movements, including abolition, temperance, and women's suffrage. Modern Congregationalism in the United States is largely split into three bodies: the United Church of Christ, the National Association of Congregational Christian Churches, and the Conservative Congregational Christian Conference, which is the most theologically conservative. So, yeah, that's another option, I guess, that, you know, that was another religion that was brought over. But, yeah, you hear the word conservative Christian and, you know, the things that they became, but they were founded on the principle of abolitionism, temperance, women's suffrage. These are things that I don't think most people who would argue that we're a Christian nation would agree with. And they say, oh, no, we're in the more reformed part where we're, you know, we're conservative Christian, which is, a different religion. If you want to talk about it being founded on a religion, then you're talking about the congregational church that came over, not the one it is today. So it doesn't really fit with the current view either. There were also Presbyterians that were here. They were based on the teachings of Calvin and Knox, coming from the Reformist and Protestant movement. The religion came from Scotland, where there was an interest in not being beholden to the crown. Scotland was trying to assert its independence in a way. So in the Americas, there were a lot of dissenting views and several factions that wanted Presbyterianism to spread and grow in many different ways. Now, around the time of the Revolution, they had talked about moral purity. Now, never forget the fact that the Scottish had migrated to primarily Nova Scotia, New Scotland, and were there and practicing their religion in their freedom of religion to be able to do what they wanted. And as they had more influence, they were starting to grow in the Americas. But around the time of the Revolution, the Scottish kind of stayed neutral to a large degree. Yes, they became part of the New World, but they didn't really fight in the Revolution the same way. They couldn't pick a side. They were mostly aligned with the crown, but they were in the New World. So it was kind of an interesting problem there, and their religion actually held them back in terms of how they wanted to respond to things that were going on around them. Now, there were a lot of dissenting views and several factions that wanted to grow in different ways. Now, they wanted to seek moral purity, but the Scottish tried to sway and influence them more based on this whole idea of not getting involved. So there's uncertainty about their cause and their principle, and they pulled back and really don't have the influence by the time the Revolution is over. You have the Patriots, and you have some loyalists that are left. And then you have a few other factions that are here, but the Scottish sort of disappeared. Even though it's called Nova Scotia, it was New Scotland, there was a colony there. They really sort of disappeared and didn't really get so involved in American life. So Presbyterianism, while it grew as a religion, really couldn't be something that would influence government. It was the smallest of the three main factions of religion that were there, so it's unlikely to have been very influential. Now, you can add to this different ideas of points of view of patriots, loyalists, and the puritanical nature of what they were thinking. And would you think of the Christianity that you hear about in those times, temperance and things like that, that would make sense in today's world? We've evolved a lot as a world. And if you look at the religion and the way we think about religion today, they're very different than they were in their history. I would argue that the only two that kind of stayed true to their nature to a large degree would be Catholicism. Putting aside the Crusades, I think generally speaking, they kind of followed the same thing, and Judaism. Catholicism had very little influence in the Americas at the time of our founding fathers, so you can eliminate them. Judaism, there was a Jewish community in the New World, but it was a very small group that founded a number of synagogues. But, you know, maybe you could say that we were a Jewish nation and not really a Christian nation at all, because maybe they had the most influence. Maybe. So the founding fathers then really didn't have any sort of religion in their thought process. This wasn't something they were thinking about. In fact, this idea that the crown was important and relevant and ordained by God to run the nation, to run England, that was really absurd to them and upsetting to them, because they wanted to make sure that they stayed separated from the Church of England. The fact that the King of England would have been ordained by God to rule, if you take on the Anglican religion or any subset of it, there's a high likelihood that you're going to have a monarchy again, that you're going to have some sort of rule, and maybe even through more subversive means, wind up being beholden to England again. So it was really important in the Constitution to delineate out that there was a freedom of religion, that people could practice what they wanted or not practice at all, because there were many founding fathers who didn't practice or didn't wear it on their sleeve anyway. And then there were also the nature of, you wanted to make sure that the people in government had no influence or weren't saying that they were ordained by God. I've heard people say, oh, this person was ordained by God to run for office. That's nonsense. That's just silliness. And that's exactly what the Constitution is telling you should not happen. We wanted to separate out church from state so that the two things were distinct and separate from each other, so you don't have someone who's influencing it based on whatever their belief system is. That's the challenge. So when you think about what we did as a nation and how we established ourselves as a new nation without any sort of religious basis, that's how we became fundamentally sound. And that's how we were able to build some of the things that we have today. And that's sort of the nature of it. So when people tell you, oh no, we're a Christian nation, think hard about that, because we're really not a Christian nation. In fact, that whole idea of church and state separation, that wall between them, is very important. Otherwise, we're back to being part of the monarchy and part of being the Anglican religion in that sense. So there's an interesting problem that happens here. Everything that happens in England happens as a result of the crown allowing it to happen, because God is telling the crown, the King of England at this point, that this can happen and that's okay, and therefore things happen, right? So it's sort of a weird mix of things that go on when you have the king who's ordained, and so the constitutional monarchy then causes things to happen. It's very absurd. So actually, Canada is a funny place too, and I say this only because Canada still is governed by a constitutional monarchy. They are still oddly connected to England. They still have lieutenants that are there, lieutenant governors who are there in each one of the provinces, who are there to report back to the crown, to tell the King of England what's going on. The king can visit at any point in time and is a dignitary and is welcome there because he's part of it. They have a French-speaking guard that actually is there to protect the king, just the same way that they have the king's guard at Buckingham Palace. It's really, really odd and peculiar, but it's what they chose to do by being a constitutional monarchy, by being beholden to the crown even so. And this is what happens. Now, they do have some freedom of religion there. You can practice different religions, and that's totally acceptable, but they still have to listen to what the King of England has to say, and especially when it comes to the overall thinking of the nation and the fact that they are a essentially Christian nation because they are a constitutional monarchy, that's different than what the United States is. Now, I said it was weird, but it's weird in two ways. One is that they're still beholden to the crown. That's just kind of a strange thing that's what they chose to do. But two, if you think about them as organized as being religious and yet still having a social system like things like universal health care. And, you know, people hate that because it's a socialist thing. But how did they get to have that? Oh, look, they are a Christian nation, and they were founded on it, and they did things different than we do. Isn't that weird? So it's just interesting when you think about the big picture and how these things fit together. And, you know, when you think about religion and how religion has influences in different places and how we think about ourselves as being sort of this nation of ideas and this nation of people that think, we need to stop and think, what does religion really mean? There's nothing wrong with organized religion as long as it's used properly and people think greater than just what they see in front of them. And you think about, you know, how can, if you're going to be a Christian nation, if you want to think of yourself that way, then what would the teachings be that would be the right things? Helping other people, doing good for others, you know, following what the Bible actually suggests that we do as people, that we be better people. Now, I'm not a religious person myself, but I get it. You know, if you want to be that way, then be that way. Embody it. Don't be so selfish and self-centered and think about yourself as better than that. So the religion we think about in the Christianity sense today doesn't match with anything that the Christian Bible tells us. And that's what's really strange about it. Anyway, that was just my thought for today. I just wanted to share it. And that's it for my podcast. And remember, if we can dream it, we can certainly do it. Bye now.
What's your point, David?